In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
People on the left burned and looted cities in so-called protests after a drug user died while being arrested. When George Floyd died, the left went off the rails insane. The burning and looting went on for weeks and months. On the far left, including people like Tim Walz and his wife, loved to see the destruction. They celebrated it. When the right lost one of its heroes because of the violent left, people on the right held prayer vigils and a memorial service that turned into perhaps the world's largest ever revival meeting. Seen by well over 100 million people, no cities burned, no looting. The right and the left are not the same. The difference between the left and the right in today's America is as different as darkness is from the light. How do we fix things now? Well, as with a lot of change, it starts with some knowledge, understanding the problem, understanding what's at stake. And then it becomes a matter of not staying silent and be willing to stand up, because things cannot change unless people make them change. The murder of Charlie Kirk has really exposed some deep societal mental health problems, especially so from people on the left. BLM, Antifa, and now some openly communist and violent groups are out there, and it's not even just young people, but even elders are proving to be susceptible to incorrect messaging, lies, from Democrats and those even further left. Joining us today is Dr. Angela Plowhead. She is an Air Force veteran and a clinical psychologist specializing in general psychology. With years serving at VA centers and now owning Capacity Solutions, we'd like to get her insights on how societal pressures are impacting our most vulnerable, from teens facing radical influences to seniors dealing with misinformation. Angela, it's great to have you back on.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know your focus is on seniors, but it's been a while since we've talked with you. So why don't you talk to our audience a little bit about your practice?
Yeah, so we have a geropsychology practice. We're the only one here in the Mid-Valley. And so we see people all the way from Portland all the way almost to Corvallis. So we see patients in their homes. That was really important to me. In the VA, I was one of the first three psychologists in the nation to be put into what's called home-based primary care, which is how essentially home care for veterans. And so when I left VA, I wanted to ensure that people all across our state get that type of service, regardless of whether or not they're connected to the VA. So we service a lot of veterans. We service just a lot of people that otherwise wouldn't be able to get mental health care.
Well, that's really cool. So like I said, I know that elders, that's your specialty, but you've got young kids. And so as a parent and as a psychologist, you've certainly seen how far left adults are pushing things like transgender narratives on high school and college kids. And a lot of that is open hostility to conservatives and conservative values, Christian values as well. So what can you tell us about what you're seeing in your profession or personally seeing from your own kids or their friends about how this is creating some new pressures on youth in ways that we certainly haven't seen in past generations?
Well, you know, so what we've seen in the transgender community is that prior to 2020, the stats around the prevalence of transgenderism were 0.007% of the population. So a very, very small percentage of people actually identified as transgender. And when those people were followed in research studies, what they found is that about 96% of them would, by the time they were 18, were actually no longer identifying as transgendered. So there's been a lot of this push by activists to have acceptance of the transgender community. And that has resulted in a larger majority of young people that are very, very confused already. You know, it's a very vulnerable time for young people when they're just trying to come into their bodies. There's hormones all over the place. And it's just a really confusing time for most young adults in trying to figure out who they are. And then they've been getting a lot of really strong messaging about, if you're confused, then it must be that you're transgendered. And so we've seen a significant rise among especially vulnerable populations, like children with autism or other developmental disabilities. The prevalence is much higher among them than it is among the general population. It's also much higher among girls than it is amongst boys. Huh. So there's certainly populations that are much more susceptible to this type of messaging. I can give you an example from my own child's life. My older son had a friend who decided that she was transgendered because she had a boy haircut.
Wow.
And so there's not a lot of really good education. You're talking to kids that don't have fully developed executive functioning skills. So that ability to clearly and rationally think through a problem, understand the consequences, understand the potential outcomes. So, which is why we don't have young children making their own medical decisions.
Sure.
So, you know, several years ago, and I remember when this happened, it was very early in my career as a psychologist that this happened, that we passed laws in Oregon that allowed children as young as 15 to make their own medical decisions. And now that I have a teenager, I can tell you they are not capable of making those determinations. Most 15-year-olds are not capable of making those determinations, especially when it comes to engaging in surgeries that are irreversible.
Sure, yeah. And that's the thing that I think is so horrifying, that as a society, certain elements of it are encouraging that sort of life-altering surgeries and the hormone blockers and all the rest. To me, that's nothing short of absolute child abuse. You mentioned this prevalent confusion that's out there, and I think you've got a certain segment of the population, certainly, you know, we have seen that with teachers and school administrators that are almost encouraging that confusion. Well, if you don't have a grounding in things like faith, you know, you come up through a family that doesn't really have that type of grounding, I would imagine that certainly leaves you open to an awful lot of manipulation, doesn't it?
Certainly. And I would say even for kids that do have a strong foundation, if they don't have an open relationship with their parents where they can talk with them about these kinds of things, or they're hearing a message that, you know, maybe politics isn't talked about in the home, or maybe issues around their body aren't talked about in the home. Because, I mean, let's admit it, everyone has issues, and maybe that's a hang up for the parents. So there just isn't open communication around those things. And so those things absolutely can lead to there being this susceptibility, you know, well, this person actually talks to me about this stuff where I don't feel comfortable talking to mom and dad about it. So, you know, that strong family relationship or having trusted adults who actually have the child's best interests at heart and not a political agenda that they're trying to meet is absolutely critical.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
For our young kids.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, let's go and take a break, come back and continue discussing the societal impacts on our most vulnerable right now. And after Charlie Kirk's death, investigators are starting to look into some of these anti-American hate groups. And among the more shocking revelations is that vulnerable populations are being steered toward violence and even murder. More with Angela Plowhead after this.
It's not just a show, it's self-defense. This is the I Spy Radio Show.
And welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Angela Plowhead. She's a general psychologist and Air Force vet. We're unpacking the mental health ripples of today's cultural battles on society's most vulnerable. So, Angela, you had been talking there about the impact of this transgender ideology and whatnot, and this is leading into some really scary stuff. There are some, there's a group called Armed Queers that recently came to light after the shooting of Charlie Kirk. They say in their mission is to train gay, queer, and transgender people to arm themselves in a fight against capitalism. They're an explicitly, openly communist organization with ties to Cuba. But also what's kind of interesting in there too is Antifa is starting to lose its mojo and its popularity. And I think BLM is another one. And so you've got the rise of other more violent groups that are springing up to fill that void. You had mentioned that previously that there was this basically a death cult that had it was a murderous transgender cult that has been accused of multi-state killing spree that took six lives. among them some police officers, and they're just lashing out against petty authority. So how do we, as concerned parents, how do we start dealing with things like this?
So I think there's certainly dangers involved with what's happening in the entire Antifa movement. And we're seeing that it is becoming increasingly violent. And the offshoots that you're talking about, the trans Tifa, you know, there have been articles written in mainstream journals like the New York Post, Newsweek, that have talked about this movement for a number of years. They've been talking about it since 2021, 2023. About how people in disaffected communities are especially vulnerable to the messaging there. So groups like Antifa tend to target those groups of people that feel like maybe they've been shunned by society or they don't have a place in society, and they provide a home for them. You know, it's kind of the same things that gangs do, right?
Or cults. So gangs
and cartels, they look for people that are, and they target them specifically, people that have no strong family connections, no place in society where they feel like they fit in. And then those are the people that they prey on. Hmm. And that's what's happened in that movement. And so at least when you look at, even the UN has talked about this, this particular group of activists that are so violent and how they recruit and that the dangers that it poses. So it's not just an American phenomenon. This is a worldwide phenomenon that's been happening that is especially dangerous. And we've seen that in the past, actually since this past summer.
Well,
attack in Texas.
Yeah, well, as far as the research is concerned, it seems like the last time that we had talked, or one of the previous times anyway, that within the psychology industry, there was this affirmation movement that you were no longer supposed to confront them with somebody that came into your office thinking they were trans. You had to affirm them. Is that still the guiding principles here, or are they, because you had mentioned there about the research, are they offering some kind of suggestions in terms, okay, how do we start turning this around, especially when they turn violent like this?
Yeah, so, you know, that's a question that I think the mental health world is really going to have to struggle with at this point. You know, there's been this, like I talked about, this push by activists to really get all medical professionals into the realm of gender-affirming care, and it has become extremely pervasive. But we've seen in some other nations where they've actually banned that gender-affirming care in
yes.
many industries in other nations. That has not yet really taken hold in the American medical care industry or mental health care industry. So, you know, still officially on a lot of the association websites and things, the primary standard of care is going to be gender affirming care. And so there, I think now that we're seeing so much violence,
They're going to have to come to terms with this, because otherwise these kinds of murder sprees are just going to continue. I mean, if you read through some of the links that we have up on this week's show page, which is going to be 15-39, ispyradio.com/15-39, there are some scary, scary groups out there. And so I would certainly hope that the mental health industry is going to start saying, hey, we have got to wrestle with this. This kind of affirmation stuff isn't going to cut it anymore.
Yeah, and really there's not good medical evidence, which is why so many other nations have banned it. And so there is going to have to be a reckoning at this point.
Yeah.
And I think we're, and this is just me speculating as a person, that I think we're probably going to see a lot of lawsuits for people that have
yes.
gone through the gender affirming care and then ended up still with so many issues, because what shows us is that it actually doesn't reduce suicides, which has been the primary justification behind doing it. So I think that there is going to be, like I said, a bit of a reckoning with the medical care and mental health industries around this particular issue. I think especially once a lot of practitioners start getting sued, or those professional organizations get sued for recommending that as a standard of care when there really isn't the evidence to support it.
Yeah. Well, if it takes lawsuits, I'm all for it. I'm usually not a fan of lawsuits, but I think you're right, is that we absolutely have to have some kind of reckoning here. And if that's what does it, that's fantastic. Okay. Let's go and take a break there. Coming up, we're going to be talking about our seniors. Why are they suddenly more vulnerable to all the fear-mongering, especially from the left? Stay with us. More with Angela Plowhead after this. And welcome back. We've been talking today to Dr. Angela Plowhead. She is a psychologist, and she's also running for Senate District 10 here in Oregon. If you'd like to visit her website, her campaign website, it's Angela4Oregon.com, and we'll link that up on today's show page, which is 15-39 on iSpyRadio.com. And so, Angela, I'd like to shift in the time that I have with you into seniors, because that really is your specialty. And one of the things that has really been, I don't know, kind of disturbing in its own way to me, is how gullible seniors seem to be nowadays. And, you know, and fear-mongering is nothing new. We've had that for, I seem to recall back in the 80s, we were being told that Social Security was going to end in 10 years and that sort of thing. But this current crop of seniors seems to be especially gullible, and I'm not exactly sure why. But we have a group here in the Dallas area. Every Saturday, they're out there holding their signs and protesting Trump and no kings and all the rest, to completely overlooking the fact that Biden was ruling as a king. He was trying to jail his political opponents and all the rest. So is there something about this particular generation that is more gullible, or is this just standard for all seniors? And we're only seeing it now because, you know, we're at that age that we're noticing those things.
So I think it's not specific to seniors. What I would say is, and I'll get into kind of why the senior piece in just a moment, but I think, you know, in general, people are very susceptible to messaging. It's why marketing works, right? Yep. So there's, most voters are fairly uneducated. I think you guys, probably a lot of your listeners, are people that are
the word you're looking for is brilliant.
Yes,
and well-informed.
Yes, brilliant outliers. They are, yes, well-informed people that really follow politics, that really understand what's happening, that are very much involved in what's going on a day-to-day basis. But the majority of people, they don't. Politics is something that just kind of seems outside of their world. You know, they might have a couple of issues here or there that they're really concerned with, but otherwise they really don't want to get involved in it because it's just so ugly, right? Politics is ugly. That's a reality. And so they don't want to spend time doing that. They want to spend time raising their kids and spending time with their family and working and growing their business, or, you know, advancing in their careers. And so most people are not willing to get as involved. And so they hear what comes up on their feeds for their social media. And social media still has algorithms. It still has things that it puts in front of you based on the last thing you looked at. I know it's happened to me in my feeds. I'll be talking with someone about something, even though I have all of my, you know, microphones and things turned off, I'll be talking about something with someone, and then 10 seconds later, it'll pop up in my feed, whatever it is. And which is disturbing, right?
Yes.
But there's organizations, companies, groups out there that is their whole job, is to dig up information on you, track every keystroke that you make on the internet to find out what it is that interests you, and then pop those things up in your feed because that's how they manage their marketing. So the things that you're interested in is what you're going to see in your feeds, and that's what you're going to believe because we live in this echo chamber of social media. And so that's all really designated by the algorithms that control social media. So it really, in a way, just reinforces the articles we're reading, the things that we already care about or the things that we already believe. And we know that journalism is very biased at this point in time. And so if you're the things that you are attracted to,
you
are
just
the things that you're going to get more of.
Yeah, it just gets amplified. Well, that was going to be another question I had there for you, is that from what you see in seniors, Are they more prone to Democrat lies through the mainstream media because they only have really that one news source, or is it something else?
Well, so let's think about a lot of the people that we're probably seeing right now. So these are the people that you're talking about are people that probably were protesting in the 70s. Yeah. And they already had this worldview about who government is and who's safe in government and who's not safe in government, or who's worthy of being believed and who's not worthy of being believed. So they're being approached into the world in that frame of mind. Mm. And so when we think about the people that were protesting in the 70s, and those same people are probably still protesting today. So I think if you go up and talk with them about, you know, what have been your lifelong political views, you might find that a lot of the people that are holding those same signs are the same people that were holding signs back in the 70s or doing the sit-ins and things
like
that.
Interesting. You know, that's a really interesting point. But what's kind of confusing to me is that what I look at, you know, when some of these guys are protesting out there, these seniors, they're protesting things that actually benefits them. Like, for example, I have seen them protesting the Trump tax cuts. Well, he's made some tax credits available to seniors so that you're not paying tax on Social Security. Same thing if the ODOT thing goes through. We've got a lot of seniors that are supporting the Democrat ODOT bill. Well, your gas prices are going to go up, which means that if you're on a fixed income, that's going to hit you especially hard. And yet there they are out protesting Trump, who's trying to make their lives better, while supporting Democrats whose policies are going to make their lives worse. But they believe the opposite of reality because the media told them so.
Right. But if what you're if all of the news that you're getting is saying that those things are bad, then that's what you're going to believe. If your echo chamber says these things are bad and they're harmful, and without doing your own research to actually go and look at the bills. And I think that's the danger of where we're at right now. That's the danger of being uninformed, is that if your primary source is what you're hearing on the internet or what you're hearing in the news, but yet you don't actually go to the primary source to figure it out, then you're going to believe whatever it is that you're told. Hmm. And it doesn't matter if you're a senior or not a senior, that's how most people are. If you hear something long enough or frequently enough, oftentimes people believe it, which is why, you know, those silos of where we're at with social media. Yeah.
Well, real quick, we've only got about a minute here with you, and I hate to lay this on you, but it's kind of a big one. How do you change somebody's opinions like that? I mean, if you're working with a senior client who's really bought into those narratives from the Democrats, what's a gentle way maybe to start counteracting some of those beliefs that they have?
So, you know, as a psychologist, it's not my job to change people's political affiliations or their beliefs. Now, as a politician, that's something completely different, right?
Sure.
So as a politician, when I'm talking with people, I'm talking about what are the realities? What are those things that that are legitimately there for you and are going to help you or harm you? And pointing those things out, that's my role in that space, is to help people to see what is going to be a good policy and what is going to be a bad policy and what are the consequences of those.
Yeah, well, I really like that approach. Just talking to them about what's going to help and what's going to hurt you, I think that's a great thing, because then it forces them to start thinking about that as well. As you mentioned, you are running for office, Senate District 10 here in Oregon, and we'll just have to have you back on sometime in the near future to talk about that. Angela Plowhead, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
After Charlie Kirk's death, a lot of people are starting to look for something to do, but don't know where to start. If only there were some training to help you understand how to influence society and your communities. Gosh, we just happen to be talking about that next. America is still dealing with the aftermath of Charlie Kirk's assassination, and fortunately, a lot of that is good for America, with a lot of people getting involved and pushing back against woke anti-American ideology and turning towards God. But in the wake of Charlie's assassination, a lot of people are wondering, how on earth did we get here to where one side believes it's perfectly okay to use violence or even to assassinate someone who expresses beliefs they disagree with? If you listened to last week's show, you heard us cite some recent polls where 1 in 3 university students believe violence was an acceptable response to what they deem as offensive speech, and 56% of people on the left believe it would be somewhat justified to murder President Trump. How did we get here? And more importantly, how do we change course and bring back some sanity to society? To talk about that, I would like to welcome Scott Allen. He is the president of the Disciple Nations Alliance. He is a frequent teacher on topics like Christianity and culture, biblical justice, and poverty. He is also the author of multiple books, including his best-selling book, Why Social Justice is Not Biblical Justice. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Mark, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So social justice is not biblical justice. I'd like to start right there because I kind of think that we could do an entire show just on that topic. To avoid confusion, though, let's define those two terms. Biblical justice, how are you defining that, and what does that mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I start the book off with concise definitions of both social justice and biblical justice. And I define biblical justice this way. Biblical justice is conformity to God's moral standard as revealed in the Ten Commandments and the royal law, love your neighbor as yourself. It involves living in right relationship with God and other people, kind of giving them their due as image bearers of God. And then it also involves impartially rendering judgment and righting wrongs and punishing lawbreaking. And that aspect of judgment is reserved for God himself and God-ordained authorities, including parents in the home, elders in the church, teachers in school, and, of course, civil authorities in the state. So that's my concise definition of biblical justice.
So then what is social justice, and especially how is that different from biblical justice?
Yeah, it's completely different. And let me just read that to you, and I'll just do a little compare-contrast. Social justice, I define this way. It is the deconstructing of traditional, meaning Judeo-Christian, systems and structures that are deemed to be oppressive, and the redistribution of power and resources from oppressors to their victims in the pursuit of equality of outcome. So the real thing I would probably underline with social justice in terms of its difference from biblical justice is, first of all, biblical justice is rooted in the existence of God and God's communicating to us his nature and his moral standard. For justice to exist, you have to have a standard of what right and wrong is that you know, we use as a measuring rod, so to speak. So, you know, if you're out of alignment to that standard, we would call that injustice. Okay, social justice has its roots are in atheism and Marxism. God is not present here. And the focus on social justice has to do with their focus is on the gap between what they call oppressors and the oppressed and leveling those gaps, trying to create this equality of outcome.
Hmm. You know, I think a large part of what leftist ideology, and I'm talking about Marxism and all the rest, what they try to do is to isolate, shame, and remove the influence of the church by convincing Christians that they should not be involved in society, in politics, in schools, or in government. But it's funny how their leftist ideology is never disallowed. I don't think leftist ideology would succeed at all if Christians weren't removing themselves from influencing society. What are your thoughts on that, and can you expand on that?
Yeah, I completely agree with that, Mark. I think that, you know, somebody is always going to be out there shaping the culture, you know, shaping the institutions of the culture, the curriculum in our schools, laws and policies. There is no neutrality, right? It's going to be one group, one worldview or another. And I agree that the church has largely kind of removed itself from the field of play, put itself on the sidelines, kind of, you know, made our focus in the church and said, you know, kind of leave the culture on its own, so to speak. And of course, that gap, that void is going to be filled. And in the United States right now, that void or vacuum was filled by another worldview, which in recent years, I would say kind of since about 2008, has been this form of neo-Marxism or critical social justice.
Yeah, it's really been interesting to see how neo-Marxism has taken such root so quickly, it seems, in the last 10 years or so. For a long time, right. You know, when I was growing up in the 80s, Marxism, communism, all that, we understood the dangers of that. We learned about the dangers in school, and now these schools are really pushing this as though this is the way to go forward. And yet, they're trying to, you know, as you mentioned there, under Marxism, they're trying to replace the existing societal structures and the current system because they see it as flawed, and yet they're trying to push another flawed system on it as though somehow this flawed system is better, even though it's demonstrably flawed because it's failed every time it's been tried.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I had the same kind of experience. I actually graduated from Willamette University right here in Oregon back in the 80s. And I remember coming out at that time, you know, having a pretty heavy dose even then of kind of Marxist ideology. I was a very young Christian, and it took me a while to get my head kind of sorted out on that afterwards. But I do remember when the Berlin Wall fell, you know, I thought, well, that's the end of that. And it wasn't until, kind of this new woke cultural revolution really kind of emerged its head here, and, you know, the right around 2008, 2009, of course, you know, leading up to 2020 and the giant riots, of course, in the wake of George Floyd, that I really realized, oh, I was very wrong, that this hadn't gone away.
Yes.
I do think it went kind of retreated to a kind of a stronghold for a long time, and that was America's universities. But then it did burst out and kind of really, you know, it frankly, it showed the success of their strategy.
Yeah.
You know, they had a strategy and they worked it successfully.
Well, so much of what they're doing is they were operating behind the curtain, and not just the Iron Curtain. They were right here in the U.S.
Exactly.
Infiltrating and everything else. And now we're certainly bearing the brunt of that. You know, we recognize the threat of left-wing Marxist ideology. We recognize they represent a danger to our nation and to our families, to the church and to people, including physical violence. How do Christians push back against anti-biblical and anti-American ideology? Scott Allen from the Disciple Nations Alliance has some trainings for that. We'll talk about that next. And welcome back. We're talking with Scott Allen. He is the president of the Disciple Nations Alliance. Their website is disciplenations.org. DiscipleNations.org, if you'd like to go check them out. With Charlie Kirk's murder and the absolutely vile things we saw from people on the left, it's time to start doing something. It's time to stop sitting quietly in pews and start bringing some light to chase out the darkness. You know, I mentioned Disciple Nations Alliance has some trainings available. So give us an overview of some of the things that you guys do, and how will people benefit and be able to use those trainings?
Sure. So we do biblical worldview training and discipleship. We have a course called Coram Deo. That's a Latin phrase that means before the face of God. And what we're trying to do with our training is a lot of Christians understand their faith as a means of salvation, which it certainly is. But what they fail to understand is that it's more than just a message of salvation. It's an entire worldview, makes sense of everything and answers all the big questions. And it's the true worldview. It's the one that describes reality as God created as it actually exists. And it describes who we are as people made in his image. And so our training is really helping people to understand that big picture of the scriptures, of which the gospel is central to, but understand that big picture and begin to think about how it applies to every area. So not just to spiritual topics, church, salvation, Bible study, prayer, but to everything, economics, business, justice, family, sex and marriage. It really is that there's biblical ways of thinking about all of these things based on kind of first principles from the scriptures. So it's a training that help people to understand and begin to think biblically in those ways.
Well, I'm glad you're out there doing these kinds of trainings, because I personally do not believe that Christians are called to be pacifists in the sense that they shouldn't. You know, some Christians think they shouldn't be involved in society. They should be removed from society, kind of keep the church kind of divorce that from society, or the sense that they shouldn't stand up for their beliefs, which I think is just absolutely horrible. So do you run into people who do think that Christians should not be involved? And do your trainings give people tools to deal with fellow Christians to inspire them to get involved?
Yeah, very, very much so. You're absolutely right, though, that we're coming out of a time, I'm talking about the evangelical church specifically, in the West, where I would say even over the last 100 years, there was a what we call a strong kind of sacred secular divide. And it was the idea that there's this kind of higher realm that the church and Christians should be focused on, had to do with church and spiritual topics. It was disengaged from culture. Culture was seen as something secular, worldly,
yes,
destined for destruction. And so it was very much, let's disengage from culture, with the one exception of going out and trying to win converts and bring them into the churches and then ultimately to heaven. That's a deep way of thinking in the evangelical church for quite some time now, and it led us to be quite disengaged. And
yes,
you can see this, like, for example, historically, the great universities, Harvard and Yale, were founded by very committed Christians who did not think in that dualistic way. They brought the Bible into every area, including education. But then somewhere along the line, you know, they abandoned those universities. They became secular, and they kind of retreated. They formed Bible schools, right? But the idea was, all you need to know is the scripture. And so we're coming out of a time when there's been this kind of retreat from culture, stay disengaged from culture. It's going to be a distraction from the most important thing that we as Christians should be speaking, which is the gospel message. And I always have to clarify to people, the gospel message is the most important thing we can share, but it's not the only thing we need to share.
Yes.
And now I would say over the last 10 years, there's been a kind of a new movement of, you know, led by Timothy Keller, the late Timothy Keller and others, the Gospel Coalition, to re-engage in culture. So that's good. Let's re-engage in the culture. But I think there, how can I say that? My critique of that has been, let's be nice, winsome, non-controversial. Let's not be political. Let's be seen as, you know, winsome in the eyes of elites in the culture so that we can win a hearing for the gospel, right? So the problem with that, of course, is that when it came to really dangerous and dark ideologies like we were speaking about previously, they didn't speak out clearly against those things. Right. They even, in some cases, kind of accommodated them. I think with Charlie Kirk, you know, he was in some ways kind of a leader of, maybe the page is now turning to, let's reengage in culture, but let's do it in a deeply biblical way that isn't afraid to be controversial. Yes, we want to be winsome and kind and generous and nice, but we do want to speak out against the lies. That needs to be very clear.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's absolutely hard to influence society if you're choosing to keep yourself separate from it.
Right.
Getting into Charlie Kirk's murder there, we had talked in the first half of today's show about offshoots of Antifa becoming violent and attracting the youth, especially targeting transgenders and focusing their anger against society. These are kind of reminiscent of what we saw back in the 1960s, where Marxist organizations were using young people, brainwashing them into hating America and blaming others and resorting to violence. So maybe this is kind of an advanced course in terms of trainings, but does any of your training deal with that level of indoctrination and how to overcome it?
Well, I do think it's important for us to understand this, you know, this ideology of critical theory, neo-Marxism. I do think that it did kind of have its high watermark around 2020 in the culture, where it did seem like, I remember looking around, you know, at the height of COVID going, oh my gosh, whether it's government or our own schools or media or sports, it just seemed like it was dominant everywhere. I do think that since then we have seen a retreat of that ideology, and I think it's because it's very dark, right? I mean, it's very divisive. It separates people into hostile groups. There's just no concept of reconciliation, mercy, or anything like that that comes out of this.
Yeah.
And it leads to violence. They're very fine with violence. There is no thou shalt not murder, you know, as a part of this ideology or treating now, people as image bearers of God.
Yeah, now they see violence as being justified because...
And I do think... Let's, that's exactly right.
Let's actually go ahead and take a break there. We're up against the clock here. Coming back, we'll continue with Scott Allen. He's the president of the Disciple Nations Alliance. You can check out their website at disciplenations.org. And we're back in our final segment now. We're talking with Scott Allen. He is the president of the Disciple Nations Alliance. He's the author of multiple books. His latest is 10 Words to Heal Our Broken World. And they're going to be having a couple of trainings here in the Willamette Valley in a couple of weeks. October 13th and the 14th, they'll be held in Portland, Salem, and Corvallis. You can head to ispyradio.com/15-39 for today's show page, and we'll have some links to further information about those. What we have seen with Charlie Kirk's murder, we cannot sit quietly by and do nothing. And if you're not sure where to start, well, more knowledge is always a good thing. So perhaps these trainings could be a good place for you to start. So, Scott, from your event flyers, to be clear, when you say advance the kingdom of God in our local communities, what do you mean by kingdom of God?
The kingdom of God is the realm where Christ rules, where he is king. And, you know, before he ascended after his crucifixion, he came back. He with the Great Commission, he told his disciples, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." So he is the king, and that was a statement that was present tense. He's the king right now, and so the kingdom of God essentially is everywhere where the king reigns. I know it's a confusing and sometimes controversial topic, and people go, well, it doesn't seem like he's reigning right now. there is a counterfeit kingdom, right? Satan is the counterfeit king, and God is allowing that to exist for a time that will come to an end, and we'll have, we will not have that counterfeit in the midst of the true kingdom any longer. But I think between now and then, we need to represent as subjects of the king, we need to represent him and his realm, the realm of light and truth and goodness and beauty. So when we're talking about advancing the kingdom, we're talking about that kind of thing.
So your trainings, are they only for Christians, or are they just anybody that would like to help get America back to its foundings?
Yeah, they are primarily for Christians, but I do think right now what we're seeing is a lot of people who are very alarmed at the darkness. They're alarmed at, you know, murder and things that we're seeing, very dark things. They may not be Christians, but they want to move towards that light, and they would be most welcome as well, you know, come and hear and see what we have to say. So
like all too many blue states, Oregon is no stranger to political, ideological, and spiritual darkness. How do the trainings here, or do they, differ from trainings you do in places like Texas?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, and I wish I had all the answers for how exactly we do these kinds of things in a state like Oregon. I'm new back to the state myself after having lived for 30 years in Arizona. I was born and raised in Oregon, as I said, went to university here, loved the state, my real heart for this state. I do think that what my sense is that the church in Oregon is strong. There's a strong Christian community, but I do think it needs to kind of learn how to move away from that kind of quietist and separatist kind of mindset and start to kind of engage in love and in truth, but re-engage and do that together. So we're going to be exploring how do we do that. And I do think it begins, right? It begins with some very basic things. Are we voting, right?
Yes. Yeah.
There's still a lot of people in the church that don't even bother to vote.
Yes.
And so, you know, how are we raising our kids? What kind of education are they receiving? So there's some basic things we need to look at, some fundamentals before we get into issues of politics and policy, I think. So.
Well, and do you dig into politics in your trainings, or is it more societal focused and how we become the influencers in not just society, but in our communities?
You know what? It's not specifically political, but we don't draw, and I know this is a little bit different than a lot of churches think about politics. We don't see politics as separate from, you know, from our faith in the sense that politics is all about policies, and policies are upstream from paradigms or worldviews or principles. And so, you know, the question then becomes, what worldview, what kind of source of sacred scripture, if you will, is informing the policies, the paradigm, the policy? So I think for Christians, for too long, we've separated politics and said we shouldn't have anything to do with that. That's a secular topic. And I think we do need to, you know, not be afraid to think about policies. The thing about policies in a society, you could think, for example, about, you know, we have policies in Oregon, for example, that provide taxpayer funding for transgender surgeries. There's victims, right? These are damaging and harmful to people that God loves. And yeah. So to sit this, you know, to be on the sidelines and not speaking or acting, I just don't think is honoring to God.
Mm-mm, no, I think God certainly wants us out of the pew and out into society and helping form and shape society. And so just real quick, again, your events will be held Monday, October 13th. That'll be in Northeast Portland, Tuesday, October 14th in Salem, and then also in Corvallis later in the day. And if you want to find out more about those, head to ispyradio.com/15-39. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Well, it's just been such an honor. Thanks for having me.
It's a given that some ideology will be impacting society. Would you rather that influence be Christian-based, the principles on which America was founded, or would you rather that society is influenced by woke, far-left Marxist ideology? I think we've all seen the impact of that ideology these last 4 years. Here's the thing. People on the left aren't bashful about what they think. They aren't bashful about shouting at you what they think. This is why it's important to not be silent, because you never know who can be influenced by you, who thinks like you, who believes the same as you do, who see America as a great country and one that needs to be protected and cherished, not torn down. And all they needed was to hear you to give them more courage and to know that they are not alone. Just like darkness is the absence of light, remember, when society is failing, it's due to the absence of Christians taking part in society and influencing it. If you want society to be headed in the right direction, you need to be involved and you need to not be silent. We get what we tolerate, and in many cases, we get what we're silent about. So don't be silent. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.